The following is a paid program.
The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. Happy to have you guys on board with us for another sultry day here in the Bluegrass. Coming up on the show today, Kyle Tucker from The Athletic. His latest story is about the upcoming Kentucky basketball team after listening to a roundtable session with Cal. And we'll get the breakdown on that. We'll talk a little Kentucky football as well. Chris Fisher from the Cat's Paws. And anything you want to add, @LeachReport on Twitter, email LeachReport@gmail.com. In fact, we had a question, a couple of them, about PATs, which I have an answer for that we'll get to a little later on. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group. It is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. As you might expect, with Eddie Grand going to the mic yesterday for his regular Tuesday session with reporters, there were questions about short yardage plays and the Wildcat formation, two of the hot topics out of the loss to Florida. He did say that Kentucky is better at the quarterback sneak now with Sawyer Smith. He said it was something Terry needed to get better at. So that could be more in the mix for them than it has been in the last couple of seasons, probably even last three or four seasons, because, you know, at Stephen Johnson's size, they were not going to use him in that role very often. Chris Rodriguez, Grand mentioned, also has gotten his confidence back and could be used in short yardage situations. That one, to me, makes a lot of sense. I think he's a guy that could really help them there. He's a Benny Snell type in the way that he runs. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him start to get back into the mix this week. Grand pointed out that they've had success with the Wildcat play, and not just in the past, but this season. So it's still going to be in their package. He says it's not as big a part of their plan as it was with Benny Snell. Although, I think if Rodriguez gets back into the mix and doesn't have any more issues with holding on to the football, he's a guy that runs that very well. I think, you know, there's some guys that have a better knack for it than others. That's when you talk about the critics for the play last Saturday. I don't think the call's bad. I don't think AJ runs that as well, personally. Randall Cobb was not a big guy, but ran it exceptionally well. Part of it is the patience that you have to have. Benny took him a while to master that. And what AJ did on his play the other night, first of all, in fairness to him, there was a missed blocking assignment, so it was not blocked properly. But if the requirement is to hesitate and wait just a beat to let the blocking develop. And there was a hole off to the right. Adam Luckett, one of the KSR writers, did a really detailed breakdown of this, and it was really well done. And it is something that, again, they're going to keep using. It's been something that has been successful for them. I'll tell you, one thing will be interesting. I noticed in the play, nobody went with Sawyer Smith when he went out wide in motion. So if they get that look again from somebody, they'll throw it out there like they did to Terry earlier. Football recruiting, Bowling Green safety Vito Tisdale cut his list to four schools, Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia, and Texas A&M. A lot of thinking that Kentucky is the strong leader there, so we'll see. There's a four-star offensive lineman out of I'm not sure where he's from, actually, but he's anyway committed to Penn State, is R.J. Adams. He visited UK last weekend and now has decommitted from Penn State. Cats stay in the top 20 of the Pro Football Focus weekly rankings. Those guys up in Cincinnati who do the really detailed analytics, they still have Kentucky at number 20 in the nation. And volleyball, Kentucky hosting number 21 Purdue tonight. two matches against ranked teams this week. This one tonight's on ESPNU at 7 Eastern Time. Our show is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We're heading to a break. When we come back, Chris Fisher will join us. Don't forget to post your pictures. If you were tailgating last weekend, post a picture in your UK gear and tag at Wild Eggs Lexington on Facebook, and you'll have a chance to win a $25 gift card as the most enthusiastic fan. So make sure you send those pictures in. Have a shot to win a gift card. We'll be right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Back into our show for this Wednesday. Links to all the stories that we talk about in the opening segment and elsewhere. You can find those on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Chris Fisher joins us now on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline from Cat's Paws to talk a little recruiting to start, since there's been some news there lately. And it's a new name that has popped up, Devin Askew, that is a five-star guard that is apparently getting close to a commitment. Right, Chris?
That's what he hinted at Tuesday, yeah. He's currently one of the top point guard prospects in the 2021 class, and said over the summer that he was content on staying put in 2021, but hinted at a commitment coming soon yesterday, and that's got some people talking that he might be ready to make the leap and reclassify to 2020. But he was one of the first rising juniors to receive a scholarship offer from Kentucky over the summer, and you look at what Kentucky has coming in for 2020, already the number one ranked class, four top 50 prospects, but really lacking that traditional point guard, that setup man that can initiate your offense and get the ball to all these scorers that they have coming in. And Devin Askew certainly fits the bill there. He's 6'3", 195 pounds, and played really well in the Nike EYBL alongside Jalen Green, who obviously Kentucky's not recruiting anymore, but Kentucky was able to really get a long extended look at him over the summer, and really fits with what Kentucky has coming in. So I think the million-dollar question with him right now is whether Kentucky can get him on campus for a visit before he makes his commitment, and how soon is soon. I think that's the big question between Devin Askew and Kentucky right now.
Who's the competition?
I think Louisville, given the timing of his announcement, if he's committing soon. He took an official visit to Louisville the weekend of September the 1st, and he's really been, I think, their top target in that 2021 class and really made him a priority. So I think Louisville stands out. I think Memphis and Villanova he has visits scheduled for. But, again, I think it's imperative that Kentucky get him on campus sooner rather than later if they want to factor into his commitment.
Let me get your take on a couple of recent commits for John Calipari. We'll start with Terrence Clark. What do you like best about his game?
When you talk about Terrence Clark, I think he's a guy that may have as much potential and upside as any prospect in high school basketball right now. He's 6'7", 185 pounds, really handles the ball like a guard, can do a lot of different things, kind of fits that positionless approach that John Calipari has been looking for, and has the size and the athleticism of a wing, but really handles the ball like a guard. I think he can get to the rim. He can create shots for himself, create for others. I think the big knock on him right now is his perimeter shot, but has been streaky in that regard, and obviously something that he's looking to improve. But Jerry Meyer, our director of scouting, called him one of the best shooting guard prospects that he's ever scouted, and wow, a guy that has number one overall pick potential. So I think that's what Kentucky's looking at with him.
That's strong. What about Lance Ware?
Lance Ware is a guy that really one of the breakout stars of the spring and summer. Rose nearly 40 spots in the national rankings with his play in the Nike EYBL. And one of those guys that just seems like he gets better and better every time he steps on the floor. He's 6'9", 215 pounds. He's a lefty, has a elite footwork that allows him to maneuver around the basket. Really skilled, I think, for his size, and a guy that Kentucky will probably look to kind of toughen up in the post. But another guy that just has a very, very high ceiling long term, really a lot of potential there, and a guy that's worked his way up into the top 35 of the national rankings.
Shift to football, a story that is the lead at catspaws.com right now. It's one of yours about some praise for Ahmad Wagner, the former Iowa basketball player turned Kentucky football star. This coming from the SEC Network.
Yeah, Chris Doering and Peter Burns tabbed him as their breakout player of the season in the SEC, which, like you said, is really, really high praise. And it's been fun to watch the development of Ahmad Wagner. This is a kid that only played one season of high school football before playing three seasons of basketball at Iowa, and a guy that is just coming into his own as a wide receiver. He's been learning on the fly and proving to be a really difficult one-on-one matchup for smaller cornerbacks. He's kind of become Mr. Automatic there on the outside, whether he comes down with it or he draws a defensive pass interference penalty. And but either way, he's definitely become a huge asset and a huge threat for this Kentucky offense.
Vince Marrow gets to say, I told you so on this one. And I was talking to Vince yesterday. I said, on one hand, if I was John Calipari, I might try to entice Wagner to come on over to basketball after football season ends to get, you know, a 240-pound, 6'6 body out there when you're, you know, you'd like to have one more big guy. Could at least, you know, help you in practice, if nothing else. But I told Vince, I said, I'm pretty sure it's looking like Ahmad's going to be busy getting ready for the NFL Combine in February.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at like a guy like DK Metcalf from Ole Miss and a really big, imposing target on the outside. I'm not sure Ahmad Wagner has the speed of a DK Metcalf, but again, he's a guy that's really transformed himself and has such a high ceiling. I mean, at 6'5", 240 pounds, it's not like, you know, he's inside playing tight end. He's outside going one-on-one with smaller defensive backs, and if you choose to play him one-on-one, you're asking to get burned, and that's exactly what Ahmad Wagner has been able to do this season.
And I was talking with Stoops about this the other night. With what he's doing now, and they're having, you know, they're paying a lot of extra attention to Lynn Bowden. It's got to open up other things. Either takes a little of the attention off Lynn, or you know, a third option in the passing game really gets to make some big plays.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's kind of a pick your poison. Are you going to double Lynn Bowden? Are you going to double Ahmad Wagner on the outside? And that's going to open things up for guys like Josh Ali and, you know, Bryce Oliver, Alan Daly, those guys. I've been really impressed with Kentucky's wide receivers. I think that was a big question mark coming into this season. Who was going to step up? Who was going to make plays? And all of those guys have done a really good job. They've kind of done it by committee. And that opens things up for Justin Rigg and Keaton Upshaw, who caught a mm-hmm. touchdown against Florida as well.
Yeah, I think Rigg had maybe five catches himself. Back to basketball. Another one of your stories at catspaws.com is something I meant to get to yesterday. Michael Mulder has signed a training camp deal with the Miami Heat. So had a good G League year, and now he might have a shot to make it in the NBA. And, you know, he never quite shot it as well as I think we thought slash hoped that he would here, but a tremendous athlete, was a great teammate, and if he can knock down threes, he might have a shot.
Michael Mulder's just another instance of something that John Calipari always talks about, the fact that everyone is on their own path, and you don't have to necessarily be a one-and-done or a two-and-done and go straight to the NBA. There are different ways of getting to the same destination. And Michael Mulder's a guy that's really hung in there. He's played really well in the G League. He played really well in the Summer League, and he's going to have an opportunity with the Miami Heat. So it cuts both ways. There's a million different ways to get to the same destination. And like I said, Michael Mulder is proof of that.
Chris Fisher, catspaws.com. It's at Chris Fisher 24/7 on Twitter. And he joins us on Wednesdays here on The Leach Report. Thank you.
You bet.
24 after the top of the hour, and our show is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll be right back.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
I thought he played well. I think it seemed like he hurt his wrist on the interception. What a great effort to even get back in that play and chase down a defensive back to prevent the touchdown on what could have been a pick six. But he clearly hurt his right wrist on that play. I don't know if it affected him, but he didn't seem to have the same accuracy after that.
It was ESPN's Todd McShay. He was down on the sidelines working the game on Saturday. He was talking about Sawyer Smith there. And from all reports, Sawyer's fine, but did get that wrist dinged up. Might have affected him a little bit on some throws on Saturday. We were just talking about Ahmad Wagner with Chris Fisher. He's a guy that our Crystal Bar caught up to after the game. And Wagner talked about the importance now of leadership off a tough loss like this.
Leaders got to step up. The older guys, the guys that's been through it, the guys that's seen losses like this, been through things like this, they got to step up and they got to talk to these guys, take them under the wing. That's what I'm going to do in my room, the rest of the team. I'm sure that's what all the other guys are going to do too, just step up and be leaders and help these guys to the situation they may not be used to.
Did you learn anything about that you didn't know?
Nothing that I didn't already know. He's hard. He's hard-nosed. He's he's just a tough kid. And that's what you want in your quarterback, somebody that's going to leave everything out there and give everything he's got. Through the good or bad, he's not going to give up, not going to quit. I can support that. He came out there and he played his game. He didn't let anything else dictate it. Like I told him before, there was mistakes made, but those are fixable mistakes. And I feel like we're going to fix them.
That was Ahmad Wagner after the game Saturday night. Had a question on the Monday morning quarterback show with Coach Ortmeier that I think it was a two-part question. We only got to one part of it, and then one of our listeners, Steve, emailed in to bring it back up. So I checked on it yesterday. It's about the extra point kicks, and Steve and the other listener whose name escapes me both noticed that Chance Poor, his extra point kicks were low. So I talked with someone yesterday, and it is something that they are working on. The fans that have noticed it are spot on. It is something they're trying to fix. As Steve notes in his email, Poor's last extra point kick was better than the first two. What he has what he does at times is try to drive the ball rather than pop it up. Think about hitting a 4-iron versus a 9-iron. How the ball is going to come off the club, and for a short kick like that, they just wanted to go up. The Florida kicker was exceptional, just getting great height on those extra point kicks. So it is something they're working on, but as long as he kicks them a little flat, there is that risk of getting one blocked. And Kentucky's got a streak now. It's something like about 124 or so PATs in a row that have been made. So hopefully they can get Sawyer to kick them all like that last one with a little more height. But you guys were spot on in your analysis on that. So appreciate the questions and the points. Going to get to a break. We're halfway home on this edition of the Leach Report. Kyle Tucker from TheAthletic.com. Coming up next here on the Leach Report Radio Network, we are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. When we have guests on the line, they come to us via the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. But Kyle Tucker's in studio today from TheAthletic.com. A lot of bases to touch on stories that he's done. The most recent one that's up is about Kentucky basketball and looking at the upcoming season and the questions and the strengths, etc. We'll get into that in a bit. We'll start with a little football, looking back at a really tough beat. We were talking about, for all the things that you can question formations, play calls, you can debate penalties, etc., all of that. you didn't convert things, tough breaks, all of that. If you just kick the field goal, you're ahead. So yep. It's got to be incredibly frustrating in the offices this week. That's what they've got to shake off.
Yeah, and it's the same. I mean, it's the same from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You've had these just brutal, kind of heartbreaking, up by double digits in the fourth quarter against Florida at home. People ready to, that's the crazy thing too. Like they broke the streak finally, but it wasn't a win you could sell. You could party with your people.
Yeah, it was down there.
It was down there. It made it more impressive, but when you exercise the demon, you'd like it to be. Where everybody can storm the field and all that. So they've now had two in a row at home where everybody's ready, and I've been at both of them down on the field in the final moments. And it's that feeling of, ready to celebrate this thing that's so rare at Kentucky beating Florida. And then you can, like, with every sort of bad play, you can feel the dread building. And then the anger at the calls, people were ready to riot on the targeting call at the end. And then in both cases, though, it was just the ultimate sort of rug pull. You've given up the lead. Your hope is waning. And then they drive all the way down the field into field goal range.
Great drive. Make all the right plays, big plays.
And you can't. And I've been standing both times. In the end zone, under where the basketball team is sitting, because it was the same deal 2 years ago. The basketball team was there. Everybody's fired. It's the big game, and I was kind of wanting to capture what was their reaction to it because they were all had their phones out. And of course, 2 years ago it was they could have been a chip shot and Benny Snell big run into easy field goal range, and they have the holding. And then this year, it was just you got the chip shot and you missed it, and that's almost worse than just blowing the lead. Is you blew the lead, but you still you made all these mistakes, but you still had sort of the gumption to come back down and have a chance, and it comes down to a kick and you can't get it done.
For those that are superstitious, they're going to ask UK to move you.
yeah, not have me,
2 years.
Not have me come stand under the. But yeah, it was. I'll never forget 2 years ago. I wrote a whole column about one man that I saw halfway over the wall. He had one leg slung over the wall, just ready. The second that went in and they won, he was storming the field. And to watch him in a state of depression drag his leg back over the other side and walk out of the stadium was...
You've covered a lot of sporting events. So I'll get your take on this. To me, if... The big question now for Kentucky is not let one turn into two like the Tennessee thing did last year. And I can understand how that happened because that was the SEC East on the line, first time ever in the SEC, championship game if you could somehow have upset Georgia. So there's a lot invested.
You're at the
that.
End of the season, not the beginning.
Yeah. This was a big game, big opportunity, but there's still plenty of time. So the approach for Kentucky needs to be, and as if they've grown their program where they say they have as players, then this should be their approach, is more of an anger. The analogy I used, and I'll see if you think it works, Bob May in 2000 was battling Tiger Woods down the stretch at Valhalla to win the PGA Championship. And Bob May's only chance at a major. Tiger was in that spot a lot of times. So if, Bob May misses a 5-foot putt to win a major, it eats at him for the rest of his life because that was his only chance.
Right.
If Tiger misses a 5-foot putt to win a major, not that many majors, obviously, but he's just mad.
Right.
And that channels his focus for the next major.
Right.
That's what Kentucky's mindset needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, you can't treat it like this was our only chance to beat Florida. I mean, you just beat him for one. You've been in position to beat him 4 out of the last 5 years. I mean, that's the other thing. In the last 5 years, well, 6 years now, I guess, they've been all but one game. They've been within a touchdown, and in many cases, came down to the very last play of the game, triple overtime in Gainesville. The last two home games, obviously, and then they beat them last year. So I don't. And what struck me for most of the game was that it did feel like Kentucky was better than Florida. That they were on par in terms of talent. They were better on the lines. And so, yeah, I think they certainly don't need to have the mindset of, well, that was our only shot, now it's all hope is lost. And I do agree with you that the major difference in the don't let one become two last year to this year is they definitely kind of not laid down, but they lost something.
Lost their edge.
You know, Georgia took something out of them. But it was, they had played themselves at the end of the season into a de facto SEC semifinal.
Yeah.
And you got that at home, and as Stoops likes to say, teed up. And so there's some heartbreak there. It's over. You know you're not winning the East anymore when that's over.
Yeah.
You do know also you're already going to a bowl game, so you're in that sort of in-between of like what it – and Tennessee wasn't very good. It's easy, yeah. easy to let up.
Exactly.
Now, though, this is still a back, you know, you almost say like back against the wall moment for a team this early in the season, because what happens in these next 2 weeks could very well dictate whether or not they are still, you know, a 7-8 win plus win team, because you lose three in a row with these two road games coming up. You're up against it. I mean, you're a losing record coming back home.
Now, conversely, you win these two.
Everything's
big favorite
fine.
Against Arkansas, then you're back in that position. Now you're going to Georgia,
yeah.
and it's a big ask, but hey, you're there. Because Florida's going to lose a couple. I don't think Florida's going to be an issue. They play LSU. They have to go to Missouri. They've played Georgia.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt if Kentucky gets to the Georgia game, like they'll still be playing for first place in the East.
Exactly.
And to me, you win these next two. You're right. You're right where any reasonable person, like if you had told me before the season Florida would beat Kentucky this year, it wouldn't be like,
exactly.
Well, that means the season's over. Because they've lost, you know, we've talked, you know, forever about how much they've lost and what is the
reason. And plus they lost their starting quarterback.
Yeah, and then did that. And what's still the reasonable expectation? You obviously don't want to blow a chance to win where you're outplaying Florida at home. But just taking that as a raw result, losing to Florida doesn't end your season. Winning these next two puts you right in position where you would expect to be. I mean, you would surely think they'll beat Arkansas at home. In that case, what are you, 5-1? Is that right? 5-1 going to the Georgia game?
Absolutely. Kyle Tucker with us from theathletic.com. We want to get into a couple of stories that he has there at the site when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Back with Kyle Tucker from theathletic.com here on the Leach Report. Vincent Askew's get ready to apparently make a commitment. What are you hearing?
I think Kentucky's in a great spot. It's going to be really interesting because this is, I think this is, we talked about on the podcast that we recorded last night. I think this is the first real Cal versus Chris Mack recruiting battle. You know, Louisville's really prioritized them. I know you had Chris Fisher on talking about that. Kentucky has been on him pretty hard as well. I know this social media post about it, something coming soon, came shortly after Chris Mack visited him. He's visited there as well. And so there's a lot of buzz about Louisville, but I think Kentucky's in a great spot. They're still pursuing Cade Cunningham, and he would be sort of the dream because he's a star, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to pull that one off. There's a lot of other things going on there. North Carolina's in pretty deep with him, and obviously Oklahoma State has hired his brother as an assistant coach. You certainly don't give up on a player like that, but you better have a plan otherwise. And I think it's highly likely that Askew will move from 2021 to 2020, and I think Kentucky's going to be right there. I don't know when it's going to pop. I think it seems like it's going to be sooner than later. But if they do get him, I think you're talking about a pretty ridiculous group for Kentucky, especially in the backcourt.
I mean, yeah.
They would have two fantastic wings with you know, even more behind those guys, and then a point guard that I think is going to be one of the better freshman point guards in the country. So,
some of these guys you know, the first one pops into my head is Dante Allen. But, I mean, there's going to be several of these guys that are not leaving after 1 year.
Right. I think Kentucky is thinking or hopeful that Emmanuel Quickley and maybe Johnny Juzang are also back. And at that point, if you've got Quickley, Juzang, and Dante Allen, who's I think in theory would have spent a year just getting healthy and working in the gym, working on his game, coming back as a totally different guy with this recruiting class, I think it will be a heavily hyped team. And there's, you know, they still have a couple more home run swings in them to try to finish the class out beyond Askew if they get them. You know, Jonathan Kuminga is a guy they just visited. Calipari was up there, took a picture with everybody at his school. The number one player in 2021. This is like the reclassification class. He may also move to 2020, and I think Kentucky's in a good spot to get him. If they were able to get Kuminga, who's good friends with Terrence Clark, now they're ridiculous. If they could ask you and Kuminga and one more big man. Now, one thing I would note, too, I think Kentucky is going to, at times, play different this year. They're going to play a more modern brand of basketball offensively. And if you question whether Calipari is actually committed to that, and I think he is for this team, look at what he's doing in recruiting this class. They are not pursuing a traditional center of any kind.
Yeah.
They're not even really pursuing many, you know, powerful, you know, 6'9", there's not a 6'9", 250 power forward. They're long, lean, athletic guys. I mean, you know, Lance Ware's not a huge kid. Jackson, who they could also get in the post, not a big kid at all. You know, wideness wise, they are recruiting a team to play that style. And I think that's really interesting. Now, this recruiting class that they have also doesn't have many shooters in it. So that also tells me that they are kind of hanging their hopes on some guys coming back
that are shooters.
Shoot the basketball. You know, Johnny, Emmanuel, Dante. Those are their three guys right now who can, you know, shoot it pretty well to shoot the lights out. And everything I'm hearing about Johnny is he's really, really shooting it well. So, I think they're going to be a good team this year and really fun to watch. They could be ridiculous the year after.
Your latest story at theathletic.com is about looking at the upcoming season. And this was after there's a group of you that sat down at a round table with Cal, I guess, a week ago Sunday.
Yeah. Yep.
What was your take just on his demeanor and then anything most interesting that he had to say?
I mean, relaxed as all get out. I mean, he was in a very, very cheery mood. I thought he relaxed and refreshed is another word. He talked about, you know, having these 10 years in the rear view and 10-year, you know, new 10-year contract in front of him. He called it the second tour of duty. And I think, too, it was important that he kept noting there was a lot of talk about change, you know, how do we adapt type thing. He said the world's, you know, everything around us is changing. How do we change and to stay on top? How do we do it even better than we've done it in the first decade? And so that was pretty interesting to me. I think Cal has kind of seen that some people have caught up to him in some areas that not only is the game, the style of the game changing, and I think he's made some strides to adjust to that. Also, recruiting is changing. It has changed in terms of he was the only guy that was out there just gobbling up, you know, one and dones, and then a lot of other people jumped on that train and it became more difficult to get the best of the best. And then we also know there are other things going on in recruiting that you've got to deal with. But also it's going to change within this next decade soon. Again, because the one and done is going to be over. Guys are going to be able to go straight from high school to the NBA, and he's obviously putting a lot of thought into that. Like, what does Kentucky's recruiting look like when you have to take a pool of players out of it? Yeah. You've got to figure – first, a big piece of it is just figuring out early who's most likely to go so I don't waste my time. And now you've got this other thing happening where guys are flirting with and going to play overseas too. And so, you know, you – does it become baseball where you sign a top five player and you count on him, and then he decides at the last minute he's going to go to be a pro, and then what do you do?
It's almost going to be equal to identifying the right level of talent guy,
right?
To
who's going to actually play college basketball?
Him.
Yeah,
yeah. Do I actually have a shot to land him? We need to get to a break. We'll come back and continue in just a minute. It's the Leach Report, and we are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Kyle Tucker with us from theathletic.com. Tonight, a slice of Wildcat history. This day in 99, James Whalen had his first 100-yard receiving game. He would go on to win All-America honors as a tight end. There haven't been a lot of first-team All-Americans at Kentucky. Josh Allen was one last season, a first-teamer. James is a guy that needs to be in the Kentucky Athletics Hall of Fame. Happy birthdays to Dickie Beal, Shane Boyd, and Rick Pitino celebrating a birthday today with a settlement, Kyle Tucker, of his lawsuit with U of L. No money. But they changed something in his personnel file.
A settlement, basically, it goes down as a resignation now, and they put out a joint like press release, basically, where they laud him as a great coach for 17 years. But there were some allegations, but maybe they weren't on his watch. But we wish him well.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes people who are rich and powerful. It's not about the money. I mean, he did sue for like $40 million, but I think more than anything, he wanted like at least something that approximated an apology from Neville, and I guess this is what it came to.
And opens him up, I would think, to a better shot of getting a job somewhere that the people may still...
He's never, ever coaching again, except he can't wait to coach again.
Yeah.
No, he's going to pop up somewhere soon on somebody's bench. He's a great coach. There's just no arguing that he's an incredible coach. It'll be interesting to see where he lands.
We've run out of time to get too deep into this article, the latest article. It's at theathletic.com. It's about the upcoming season. But one quick thought, one guy, who's the most important one guy, and then we'll get into more of this maybe next week in more detail for success this season. Is there one that's...
I would say 1A, 1B, EJ and Nick. I think I would say Ashton, but I think I know what we're going to get out of Ashton and Maxie. I think I know what we're going to get out of Maxie. I think he's going to be the score they need to be. But are one of or both of EJ and Nick going to be good enough?
Kyle Tucker, you can read that story at theathletic.com, and we can get into it in more details as we move closer to the start of the season. But have a great rest of your Wednesday, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report Radio Network. Miss the show? Catch the podcast at TomLeachKY.com or on the iHeartRadio app.